Grace to you and peace from God our Father and the Lord Jesus Christ. Now, it may not feel like fall is coming when you go outside, although today is going to be, you know what, cool in the mid-90s. But when you go into a store, you would think it was the middle of September, if not the middle of October. Pumpkin spice lattes will soon be available. And last weekend, we were at a friend's house for dinner, and another friend brought over a package of candy corns they had just picked up at the store. Now, they save the harvest mix for themselves. You know, that's the one that has candy corns and the little pumpkins in it. It's actually better than just plain candy corn. I don't want to hear it. If you don't like candy corns, that's your problem. So the holidays are definitely on their way. And even though school has begun in most places, it is still summer, at least according to the calendar and according to the weather. So let's slow down on the holiday candy and decor until at least after Labor Day. And then we can put away our white belts and we can start drinking hot chocolate as we curl up to watch those Hallmark holiday movies. What am I saying? Those Hallmark holiday movies are available all the time. And if you happen to miss one, don't worry, because we probably have it saved on our HMR. So come on over. Do you have an HMR? It's what I've renamed our DVR. It's a holiday movie recorder. And our DVR is just full of Hallmark holiday movies. Because when I record something, I watch it and I delete it. You're sitting over there. It's a little harder to see you. Anyway, our reading this morning, and actually for this entire sermon series from Ruth, could easily be made into a Hallmark movie. Now, it's not set during the holidays, but that doesn't matter. If you have the Hallmark channel and an HMR, you can pretend it's the holidays year-round. Holiday or Hallmark movies are formulaic. I hate to disappoint you. They're formulaic and predictable, much like the story about Ruth. There is always a tragedy or a predicament or a natural disaster that brings all of these characters to this quaint, snow-covered New England village at the holidays. There isn't any snow in our story, but there is a tragedy. Actually, two tragedies. There's the famine, and then there's the death of all the men in Naomi and Ruth's families, which brings them to the town of Bethlehem at the beginning of the barley harvest. And like a quaint holiday New England family or a village at Christmas, this harvest time would have made the little village of Bethlehem just bustling with people and activity. And every Hallmark movie has a coincidental meeting that results in a relationship by the end of the movie. You know it's over when they kiss. In our reading, Ruth just happened to wander into Boaz's field, and about that time, Boaz just happened to show up in his field to check on the progress of the harvest. Coincidence? I think not. Our reading begins with the introduction of Boaz, a prominent rich man who was related to Naomi through her deceased husband, Elimelech. And the stage is set for us as the reader. But Ruth and Naomi appear to be unaware of what is about to happen. For this, too, is a technique of the Hallmark movie where the audience is in the know, but the characters are not. Allegedly unaware that a relative owned the land that she might glean, Ruth set out to glean behind someone in whose favor she might find, or whose sight she might find favor in. And I wonder if she wore her best gleaning outfit that she might find favor in the sight of a landowner. And as it happened, she came to the part of the field that belonged to Boaz, who we know is from the same clan as Elimelech. And when Boaz arrived on that field, he offered a blessing upon his workers, clearly demonstrating his own faith in Yahweh and a kind relationship with his workers. Now, Naomi immediately caught his attention, so he asked the question that he probably already knew the answer to: to whom does this young woman belong? And when his servant in charge tells him that she is Ruth, the Moabite, who came back with Naomi, Boaz gives her permission to glean his fields. And not just permission, which the law would have required, but Boaz was exceedingly generous with this young woman, whom he pretended not to know. Now, the Hebrew law at the time of Ruth and Boaz would have required landowners to set aside a part of their property so that those who were poor and the oppressed, the orphan and the widow could come and they could glean it. They could harvest what was left over. But it wasn't just what was left over accidentally. It was what was left. The law required them to leave a portion of their harvest so that others would be able to come. They could provide for the poor as a part of their observance of the law and acknowledge that all that they had, all of their harvest was a gift from God. And that gleaning actually was a gift from God to the poor in their community. Those who didn't have property, didn't have land to harvest themselves. Now, the law didn't require the landowners to deliver the harvest to the people in need, but to leave it a portion of the field so they could harvest it themselves. And while this might sound exceedingly generous, the Hebrews understood that all that they had was a gift from God to begin with. So all they were doing was leaving a part of what God had blessed them with to bless somebody else. And as stewards of God's creation, we too should give back to God's creation, both human and non-human, in thanksgiving to our Creator, should we not? Now, Boaz not only knew the law, but he followed the law, and he had a system in place that allowed for the final harvest or gleaning of his fields to be done by his neighbors in need, but that didn't seem to be enough for Ruth. And actually, Ruth and Naomi were not just neighbors in need. They fell into the category of being a part of his clan, and as such, he had a greater obligation or duty to them. There was no blood relation here. You see, Naomi was married to Elimelech, who was somehow related to Boaz, and Ruth was married to Elimelech's son. There is no biology that connects these folks together, but there is a family connection, a clan connection. And as one of their closest relatives, Elimelech had responsibility to care for these widows, and that's what he did. But that's not all that he did. Boaz went far and above beyond what the law would have required, much like Ruth had done with Naomi. The law didn't require Ruth to return to Bethlehem with Naomi, but she did. And when they returned, Ruth went to work to support both she and Naomi. Last week, we described this level of selfless love as hesed. Hesed. And now Boaz is demonstrating hesed to both Ruth and Naomi. Boaz not only provides Ruth with food, both through the sharing of his lunch and his harvest, but he commits to protect her. He tells her to stay close to the men and his crew, or to the women, so the men can overlook them. And then he instructs the men twice to not harass Ruth. In our translation that Rich read for, it said that to protect her, that other men wouldn't take advantage of her. She is given a special place among the gleaners, and she is given more of the harvest than she was due. Boaz instructs his crew to not just leave part of the harvest on the ground for Ruth, but to pull some of that harvest out of their bunches and leave it for her that she might have some of the good stuff, the stuff they themselves would have been harvesting to be able to be sold. And when Ruth is done, we read that she has an ephah of grain, a basket full, which is a lot. It could be compared to as much as half a month's wages, all in one day. Ruth appears to have hit the barley lottery, but she hasn't done so by chance or accident. Although God is not verbally pulling the strings in our story, it is clear that Yahweh is in charge. Boaz's first words in our reading and in the book of Ruth are a blessing from God. Boaz is clearly in God's favor and doing what God would have him do as a faithful Jew. And as a result, Ruth and Naomi are blessed. However, both Ruth and Naomi have already acted selflessly in our story because both of them tried to give the other what they perceived they needed. Remember last week, Naomi told Ruth and Orpah to go back to their mother's home in order that they might be married to somebody else. She wanted only what was best for them, even though saying goodbye was difficult. And Ruth just couldn't imagine leaving Naomi, so she forsakes what might be best for herself as she stays with Naomi as they come back to Bethlehem. Each demonstrate hesed for the other. It seems like then Boaz, when he learned that Naomi had returned, this member of his own clan, he might have gone to her immediately and offered her his help and protection, but Boaz doesn't do that. He allows this accidental meeting to happen in the field, allowing Ruth and Naomi a bit of independence at a time when women wouldn't have had any independence. It's quite remarkable, if not miraculous, that we today are reading a story about two women in the biblical canon, written at a time when women had no standing in culture. They weren't the ones writing the stories, so the stories were always written by men, and they were about men. And yet here we have this story, a book of the Bible named after a woman at a time when it would have been scandalous, to be certain. My friends, that's because God has and does move in mysterious ways, life-challenging and culturally challenging ways. We see that in this story, and we see that in the story of Jesus' birth, life, ministry, crucifixion, and resurrection. You see, Jesus didn't come to live according to all the cultural and religious rules of the time. Jesus didn't come to meet the expectations of those who were alive when he was born. No, Jesus colored outside of the lines. He went into the wilderness, to the villages, to the poor, to the oppressed, to the widows, to the orphans, to the foreigners, to the imprisoned. Jesus didn't take on the political and religious authorities on their turf. He established a new set of rules or ethics based upon love, based upon hesed, based upon grace. And this story of Naomi, Ruth, and Boaz, I think, is a foreshadowing of Jesus' story. A foreshadowing of the love that will be expressed through Jesus in a non-traditional, unexpected, miraculous, coincidental way. For their story is unconventional. Remember, as a family now, they will be a family two generations. A relative of the deceased father-in-law marries the foreigner girl in their community, a foreigner who was unfit to be wed. You didn't marry Moabite women. And yet through this untraditional, this is not, if you were creating a poster, advertising, family ministry, right? Not American, that was dumb, but you know, the perfect archetype of a family, you wouldn't draw it up as two generations and you know, this young foreign woman and this landowner who was a relative of her father-in-law who had passed away. And yet, through this family, this non-traditional, atypical, or maybe mostly typical, because most of our families don't look like the picture either, right? If we're being honest. And through this family, God's love is demonstrated. And I would say foreshadowed to the love that is shared and given and offered to each of us through Jesus Christ. Not in a way that people would have imagined it, but in a way that shakes at the very foundation of the culture at the time. Why is this story recorded? Because it shook at the very foundation of what the Hebrews thought was right and just and real. And God showed up in a real and tangible way through the lives of these very ordinary people. Ordinary, like you and like me. And friends, God is still working through and among ordinary people, right? If we didn't believe it, I don't suppose we would be here. God is working through people like you and like me who come from families that might be a bit dysfunctional, might be a bit non-traditional, might not look like the postcard or the poster. Thanks be to God that God shows up in each and every one of those circumstances in what appears to be a coincidence. And God showers grace and love, hesed, upon each and every one of us in a way that we can't help ourselves but leave part of that grace at the edge of our field that it might be experienced, it might be gleaned by those around us. Much like the harvest that is shared with those who need it most, God's love is shared in this story and in our lives through the acknowledgement and thanksgiving that we love because God first loved us. So God continues to reap a bounty, a harvest, a bounty of love upon us. I can't get harvest in there. I can't figure out how to make it work. And with all that love, there is more than enough left over to share with those around us, which is what not only the law required, but what God has done for us through Jesus Christ. Amen.